This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Born SQL and their product DBSnitch. DBSnitch is a once-off report service resulting in an in-depth examination of your existing database instances and recommendations to bring them up to industry standards, ensuring that your data is safe. DBSnitch gives you a comprehensive view of where your database currently stands, along with a customized game plan to get it where it needs to be. Of course, Born SQL offers both on-site and remote support. Find out more at bornsql.ca/dbsnitch or by contacting Randolph West via email at info@bornsql.ca with the keyword discover in the subject line. Welcome to episode 13 of Discover ADN. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to discoveradn. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Keitaro Kobayashi, who goes by the name Keita on app.net. He lives in the big city of Tokyo, Japan, and works as a mostly independent web developer. When not playing with HTML and CSS, he likes to rant about space exploration and read Wikipedia. Please join me in welcoming Keitaro to Discover ADN. Hello.
Hello.
Let's get right down to business. Can you tell us, when did you join app.net?
Yeah, sure. I just looked this up in the API a couple minutes ago, and it says that I joined in August 17th, 2012, which is, I think it was still during the Kickstarter-esque crowdfunding campaign. So I did pay $50 before it was reduced to 30 or 36, I think it is right now. And I think I don't remember exactly why, but there were a lot of people who were, it was around the time like the Twitter API had been, you know, changing, you know, the quadrants. And so a couple of the people who I regularly listened to around that time were recommending app.net on their podcasts. I think the one that really influenced me was Hypercritical with John Siracusa. I remember him talking about how he wanted app.net to succeed, and how it was like an interesting idea to basically pay for the service that you're using. And there are so many services now that, well, they're, you know, subsidized or supported almost entirely by advertising, which is not very, although I know that advertising can bring in a lot more money than users are willing to pay, it just seems kind of dishonest to me. So yeah, that's why I joined.
Can you tell us why you use your real name on app.net rather than a pseudonym?
I don't know, actually. I used to use pseudonyms. I still have a couple out there, like on GitHub, my username is kchan34. But I just got tired of using it, I guess. I mean, there's, Keita isn't a very popular, or it's not a in common name in Japan, so whatever. It doesn't matter if I'm anonymous or not, I guess.
What would you like to see more of on app.net?
I really like the app.net community, with, you know, the microblogging community, but one thing that I'm kind of worried about is the amount of people. I mean, it seems like there are a lot of developers and programmers, but there aren't that many people outside of the like development and programming world. I mean, there are a few, but I would like to see a lot more regular people or people outside of our, you know, like our regular circle of friends. And I know that's kind of hard because it's not a feature that you can implement in a week or a month or something, but that's what I would, that's the direction that I would like to see app.net go in.
Let's change gears a little bit. Can you tell us, what do you like to be known for?
That's a interesting question. I do a lot of things. I work for a company that I started with my friend. It's called Flagship. We do a lot of web development. Let's see. We probably do about half of our projects in Rails, and the other half of our projects are, you know, doing custom WordPress sites for clients. And so I do that about half the week. And the other half of the week I use to work on personal projects. Recently I've been working on a time tracking app called Toki, and it's a Mac application that just keeps track of all of your activity on the computer. And that actually uses the app.net API in a kind of a unique way, I think. I haven't seen many or any apps that use it this way, but it uses it as like a sync mechanism where each app activity entry is a separate private message in a private channel. So I'm thinking of working on some kind of like a web interface or something like that to access the well, your app activity from maybe the web or an iPhone app or something like that. I'm not sure yet.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. Are you using the sync like a pattern room?
Yes, except you are the only user, so all of the messages are private only to yourself.
Does that mean that I would be able to see and perhaps delete some of these records with another app.net client such as Felix or Patter?
I'm not sure. There are some apps that let you view custom channels, but usually it won't let you, I think. I haven't tried it.
Well, that certainly sounds like an interesting application. I look forward to playing with it myself.
Yeah.
My next question is a little out of this world, so I guess you know what's coming now. You have a deep-seated fascination with everything space-related.
Yeah,
one could say that it's insatiable, the amount of information
insatiable.
That you take in and report about. What got you interested in space and space exploration?
I have been trying to, you know, think of that as well, but I can't really remember. There's, you know, how sometimes you feel like the first memories of your childhood are of whatever. Like there hasn't been any time of your life where you haven't felt whatever. I mean, space exploration is one of those things. My favorite movie growing up as a kid was Apollo 13. And I think I watched that maybe, I don't know, my parents kind of got annoyed at me because I wanted to watch it so much, a few times a week or something like that. But and I've always been interested in space technology, you know, space stations, rockets, stuff like that. So there's this game that I forgot how I heard of it, but when I heard of it, I was very excited. It's called Kerbal Space Program. And basically what you do is you make rockets and you launch them into space, and they have kind of a mini solar system where you can, you know, explore the planets, and it's a really fun game.
Yeah, I've seen you talking about that game online quite a bit, but I'm afraid to try it myself. I have a feeling that if I did start playing, I would get no work done.
Oh, yeah. usually when I come home from work, I usually make dinner with my wife, and then we sit down on the couch and she does something, and I'm usually playing Kerbal Space Program. So.
Well, staying on the topic of space, how soon do you think it'll be before humans begin traveling off the planet in colony ships?
That is a very good question. We have the technology to send people into space, but we don't... We're starting to work on new technology to have humans living in space sustainably, but sustainably? I don't think we have the technology to do that yet. I think the biggest thing that's holding us up is some kind of a energy source. We do have RTGs, radioisotope thermal generators, but those don't, they would only last for maybe 20 or 30 years, and they're not usually that efficient.
They also don't generate a lot of electricity.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the Voyager probes are equipped with those, and
right.
As you know, over the years, they've had to shut down more and more of the equipment on those probes.
The radio, yeah.
Yeah, so now it just has the radio plus right. A couple of sensors,
so,
and that's it.
If we were to send a colony ship to maybe another star system, it would take at least, 500 to 800 years, which that's a lot of energy that we would need to bring on with the journey. Maybe in the next 300 years, I don't know. But there are some promises with, well, they always say fusion, nuclear fusion technology is 50 years away, but I don't know. That's a very good question.
Well, let me throw this next hypothetical at you. If you could retire on one of the many moons in our solar system and not die,
mm-hmm.
well, not die from the moon, which moon would you want to retire on and why?
That's pretty easy. It would either be Europa or Titan.
Because they have water?
Right. And because of, well, the atmosphere, Europa doesn't have much of an atmosphere, but the potential of materials that I would be able to use to help me. Europa does have the radiation coming from Jupiter, so that's not very, attractive. But Jupiter is very beautiful, so I don't know. Radiation or looking at Saturn, Saturn is beautiful too, but either one of those two.
All right, let's come back down to Earth. You currently live in Tokyo, correct?
Yes.
What brought you to Japan?
Actually, I was born here in Japan. And my parents, they brought me back to the States. They brought me to the States when I was about one or two. The legend is that my mom just didn't like the earthquakes. So, she really wanted to get back to the States. So I was only two, so I moved back with them. And I lived in Maine for most of the time that I was in the United States. And as I grew up, I didn't really like how far away everything was. Like, I had to drive to school every morning for about an hour or so. So I just got fed up with that, and I wanted to try living in a big city. And what city is bigger than Tokyo? So I decided to come back.
Yeah, the Tokyo area has the same population as Canada, so you certainly chose a big city. It is. For the 1 year that I was living in that city, I was surprised that so many people could fit into such a tiny space.
Yes, I was very impressed, actually, with how efficient the public transportation was. There was nothing like that in even New York City. So that was pretty exciting for me.
All right. Well, let's move to the final part of our show. And this is when we get to recommend some of the people that we enjoy seeing and interacting with in our timelines. So could you recommend for us three people and why you enjoy following them?
Sure. So I guess my first recommendation is C. Gifford. I think you interviewed him on the second episode.
Yes, that's right. The second episode.
First? Something like that. And I forgot how we started talking, but okay. So he has really interesting projects, and I think his thoughts are pretty interesting, and he will probably interact with you if you have interesting questions or insights about what he's working on or what he's talking about. And my second suggestion is Sniper Girl. This kind of goes with what I was talking before, like I wanted to see more like non-programmers or non-developers. I think she is a developer, but she doesn't really post that much about development work. And it is kind of crazy, and I kind of like that craziness in my timeline sometimes. And the third one is Hybotics, Hybotics. And this guy is working on, I'm not sure if it's his job or not, but he's working on a lot of like robots and a lot of robotics. And so every time he's, you know, posting about things that are going on with his Arduino or Raspberry Pi or whatever, it's really interesting because someday I might want to, you know, do something like that too.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those recommendations. And I'd like to thank you again for being my guest today.
No problem. Thank you.
And this concludes the 13th episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Keitaro for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born Sequel. Have a nice day.